Congratulations. You've made an excellent life choice today. You're displaying strong character and good taste in tuning into this infotainment web zone. We're poorly informed, highly opinionated, and hold no topic off limits. This is Idiots Discuss the Universe.
Today.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to go see the doctor tomorrow, so that'll be a lot of laughs.
That'll be a whole bucket of laughs.
Yeah.
Doctor chuckles.
Yeah, we'll see what that's going to be all about. So, a little nervous about that, but other than that, not too much, really. Nice. Just kind of enslaving away again.
Hey.
Just grinding.
Well, that's how you know you're doing good.
I think so.
Is if you never have a moment to yourself.
Yeah, been busy.
Yeah,
just cleaned some trash just right outside my front door. Someone just kind of threw a bunch of garbage right outside my back door there. It was nice.
How nice of them.
Yeah.
They're,
a couple receipts and some napkins. Just kind of throwing that shit in the garbage.
How? That always just warms
littering,
my heart.
Littering's so weird. Because it's something that you saw all the time when I was growing up. And now it's like, oh my God, I want to pull people from their car and like throw them in the street. You know what I'm saying? Like, what if I see anybody like dump their ashtray out the window of their car or anything?
Or
like
even
that.
Flick a cigarette.
Or like all of their fast food garbage. But like back in the day, like that was a common fucking deal.
Dude, if someone throwing their fast food garbage out of the car, the whole bag. Just fucked.
I mean, I had relatives that would do shit like that when back in the day.
And it's not even like a Republican Democrat bullshit thing, you know. It's just a fuck you type of a thing. Like, and I get like people are like gonna make it about climate change or whatever, but it's even simpler.
There's more going on there. You know that there's like this
with
this,
climate change.
No, with littering.
Oh.
You know, other than climate change.
Well,
you know,
I honestly think it's simpler. Like it's just like this.
It's
this
a
kind of
respect issue.
Yeah. Well, it's a respect issue for sure. I mean, maybe it's because they don't respect themselves, but it's clearly a lack of respect for. It's a visual lack of respect for just your entire world around you,
right.
The space that you
the
occupy,
the environment you live in.
Yeah. Right?
Like it's just like this. I'm shitting where I live all the time. What is your house like?
It's a bit of a, yeah, totally.
So it is like this lack of like what anybody cares that I think, I mean, or about myself, or like it's just this total. It's really weird.
There's like a domination aspect to it. I think like a projection of. Like ownership even because it's like when you I put my shit where I want to I don't give a
that's
fuck
what it is. And those are the same dudes nowadays that'll still get out of the car and try to fight you or shoot you or
well
all
right
the same
which is why I'm not doing shit if I see you throw trash out your window. I'm not gonna fuck with you by any means, no, but I'm gonna deep down inside
think that they're garbage.
Well, yeah, I'm just gonna think that you're kind of a garbage human, and ultimately I'm just gonna feel sorry for you. I'm just gonna feel bad because I'm like, oh, you know,
that's one of those things. I don't feel sorry for him. I don't like with that. I don't feel sorry for him.
Well, I don't,
or like if you're mean to an animal or a kid, like
ooh.
I don't feel sorry for you.
But see, with all that stuff, I think ultimately, like, I initially there's anger when I see that kind of thing. Initially it is anger, but I think anytime you unpack it, you kind of start to feel bad for that person. I mean, obviously there's things that are inexcusable to do, but they always seem like they've got this like,
there's always some
like
sort
trauma.
Of story behind it.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, there is something, and I guess that's old, it's old fashioned and like not a very good way of thinking about it, but I think that there are times that you just like cancel out like any sort of sympathy. If you do the shit, if you do like evil shit, like I stop feeling sorry for you no matter what happened to you in the past. You know what I'm saying? Like if bad shit happened to you and you perpetuate it, like there's a certain level of self responsibility there.
You're totally right. There is a line where you've lost any sort of potential empathy that another person might have
yeah.
for you.
Yeah.
But I think there's that it kind of raises an interesting question where it's like, A, where is that line? I think it's probably different for everyone, like slightly.
I think so.
I mean, most people have, you know, things like murder and rape on the other side of that line.
Oh, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
But as far as like the nuanced location of like what you will or won't write someone off for on a moral level.
I mean, littering is really probably, you know, not on that other side of that line for me. I mean, that's something that is a forgivable offense.
Right.
And pretty much all counts, you know.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you know, I think that there are parts where like you can unpack it all you want and mm-hmm. like feel sorry for all the bad things that happened to like Henry Lee Lucas as a child or whatever, mm-hmm. but still
think he deserves to die.
Well, I mean,
or
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
I mean, like be like that person needs to no longer exist.
I completely agree.
Or like, I mean, most people that like abuse kids were abused themselves, but guess what? Fuck it. I really don't care.
You should be put away. Yeah.
I mean, like there is some sort of level of personal responsibility that it does not matter.
Anymore. 100%. But it's interesting because there's kind of this like compartmentalization that goes on a little bit, you know, where it's like a part of you can feel a degree of empathy even for, you know, sick, deranged fucks like serial killers, you know, like a degree being like, you know, when you hear about their childhood and how like their mother wouldn't let them eat unless they had, you know, just like fucked up mm-hmm. shit, you
sure.
know, just
sure.
like things that no child should ever have to go mm-hmm. through.
Sure.
You feel bad for like that isolated situation, but that doesn't mean that you then go on to be like, well, I guess it's okay that they killed a bunch of people, you know. Those two things don't need to go hand in hand. Like you can still have empathy for the circumstances that made someone do something terrible and still completely disavow and abhor their terrible action that took place. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of confusing, but
yes, I mean I get what you're saying, and I mean those are like of, you know, if you do compartmentalize it, that is something that you can do. Yeah, for sure.
You know, should you do
I think that there are times that there are certain individuals that no longer deserve that sort of thing. You know, I believe that you can analyze what happened to them in order to prevent that from occurring in the future, if that's mm-hmm. something that's feasible. But there are a lot of people that have fucked up shit happen to them as kids, and they don't end up like murdering people and burying them in their basement.
Right. No, you know?
So like the ones that do, no matter what happens, like it's just not.
No,
I'm done.
They deserve the book.
Yeah.
They deserve the book thrown at them. Like that's what I'm saying. They deserve the entire weight of punishment that is available. They deserve what they get.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm saying is like, can you have sympathy for the child Ted Bundy?
Sure.
But then still think that he deserves to die or rot in a cell or fucking pay for what he did. You know what I mean? Like, can those two sentiments be held at the same time? I think they can, you know?
Right.
Like I feel bad for that little kid who had to grow up into the serial killer who I now think should die.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Or I think should suffer, like, which is a weird thing to think. And in a lot of these cases, I've always felt like the death sentence is merciful, you know?
Yeah,
to certain degrees, like, you know, solid. I guess I don't know, because we're dealing with psychopaths and they love just being like, yes.
I'm kind of strange in the sense that like I don't know about like the punishment side of any of it. You know, for me, like I'm not motivated to even really consider that. It's like, what is appropriate punishment for whatever that? It's really hard for me to decide that sort of thing.
It is. I mean, it's hard. Yeah.
You know, I mean, because I don't know. It's to be like that karmic instrument is like kind of way more than I've ever been able to really handle. You know, trying to like deal out justice or that sort of thing, you know, like, because I had kind of some tendencies when I was younger, and that does not work out well. That's not an easy thing to, like, you know, try to defend and be that, you know, whatever that thing is, you know, and be and mete out, like, justice upon the world is a difficult, difficult, thankless, fret with constant, like, contradiction and trouble. Like, that's a weird deal.
What? Well, yeah. Very true.
So I do, I think that there is almost, like, whichever way you go, like, whether it's the death penalty or life imprisonment or whatever. I mean, like, I feel like you need to kind of figure out whichever that other that person dreads most is what you should probably do, you know, or something. You know, I mean, in those cases.
See, that's interesting. That
I mean, I guess that sounds kind of cruel, but like same time, like,
well, I mean, I think it's. It's a close to, it's not eye for an eye, but it's like, it does seem kind of old school in a way, like in that, that's probably how punishment has been dealt with for like the majority of human history, you know, like, oh, Fred fucking stole all of our fruit, you know? And you know what? You know what I know about Fred? He hates snakes. He fucking hates snakes. So you know what we're going to do to we're going to put him in the snack. And we'll defang it, all right? But we're going to scare the shit out of him, all right? And everyone's like, oh, hell yeah. And that's going to be our Friday night. That's going to be our Saturday night. It's going to be a ball, you know?
I think there is some of that. I mean, I think for more serious stuff back in the day, like, it was not...
It was death.
It was just death.
Just death.
Death. And sometimes, like, it was
I think they
creative.
Got creative. Yeah.
They did get creative with it.
They got creative
but
with
I think
it.
A lot of, most of history, like, they just kind of...
Yeah, it's just like,
yeah, whatever.
We don't want to look at your face
you
anymore.
Done. Just like, yeah. And...
we're exiled.
I don't know if that's the right way of going about it or what.
Yeah, me neither. Know? I do not know either.
It's so weird because in the past, they don't record people like that. You
what
know,
I mean?
They don't record... serial killers and I guess that there was all sorts of like sexual abuse and stuff going on throughout history and all that sort of thing, but it was never like part of the record in the way that it has been since, say, like the 50s or the 60s, you know. And so it's an interesting phenomena that all of a sudden that's something that we as a culture like think about on a larger generalized sense.
Do you think it had to do with like the birth and societal acceptance of like psychology as a practice? You know, like maybe those folks were always being arrested or put to death or punished, but the recording and like almost study of them wasn't really made into much of a thing. Like the documentation, like there's some sort of specimen, wasn't made into a thing until psychology was a part of the cultural zeitgeist.
Well, I think that's the case with perhaps like people that are sexually abused, and that's how that's become a nationwide topic over the last like 50 years, you know, in a way that it had never been before. But I think with like serial killers have arisen due to the social the way that we live. You know, I believe that like early modern Europe, that transition from the countryside into the anonymity of the city had allowed, and also that sense of isolation and that isolation amongst the multitude sort of postmodern dread began, you know, with Jack the Ripper, you know, in that sort of time. Right. And I'm sure if you go to other large cities at that time, there were other people that did the same thing that they just were never like caught, and they weren't as elaborate as Jack the Ripper. He kind of screamed like, oh my God, I'm doing this as like a serial killer and pay attention to this. Where there are a lot of people that could just go to the poor areas of the town in like Paris and stab a few prostitutes, and like the cops would not ever think about it twice. Right. You know what I'm saying? They did not care. So, I mean, that was probably going on all over as those cities moved into that sort of thing. And so that's what's given rise to serial killers, is they're able to operate because they have that anonymity in a way that they didn't in like rural or small medieval city life, because like that idea of privacy that we like worry about so much as a society, especially in America, is a new topic, something that you didn't even think about back in the day, because like you lived with the same like 150 people. Everybody knew everybody's business about everything that was going on with them.
Right.
You know, that's the standard for human beings.
Yeah.
Is that you pretty much, everybody knows everything. Every time you go to the bathroom, if you're having a head cold, everybody knows. Everybody knows everything.
Sure.
And yet it was still easy in a situation like that. It seems like it would be easy to get alone time, you know, to truly be by yourself, even if it's not something that you did very often in like a tribal situation. All you got to do is fucking walk like 20 feet into the woods and you're in the jungle and you're by yourself, you know, and you're alone with your thoughts, like the privacy of thought. And I think we should do a whole separate episode on this topic, but I think the privacy of thought is like a big encroachment that,
the privacy of thought, that idea of being alone and being that self-reflective thing actually kind of started to arise as far as like this latest incarnation of it, kind of like with the romantic poets, you know, William Wordsworth and that quiet contemplation and being out amongst nature and getting away and getting that inner time. Like that's also a very modern sort of value in a way that I was talking about a couple episodes ago, like how the colonists in America didn't view the wilderness as this beautiful, pristine thing. They viewed it as like a terrifying hellscape, you know, and in the same sense, like that was kind of the first shift of that modern sensibility of like, oh, the city's kind of drab and horrible, and these, we can get out of it and get into this nice quiet thing. Like I think people that lived in that medieval setting, it wouldn't occur to them to go stand out in the woods by themselves, because they're getting eaten by a bear.
You mean, you know, like the tribal
or in the tribal, like you wouldn't, like I'm not going to go out there by myself because I'm going to get eaten by a bear,
right?
Or unless I'm doing something, or like I'm out there working, or that sort of thing.
That makes more sense.
You're always kind of with your people. You know, that idea of individuality was not like a huge thing back in those days. You were part of the whatever.
You're,
you know,
part of a pack.
Right.
Yeah.
And the idea of I and me, it was a very different one, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think that that's really interesting, like especially the privacy part of the whole thing, is that we do really worry about people. I just don't know what people are trying to keep private. Like all of these people that are super worried about their privacy, like in general, are people that like, well, I don't know, like what do you do that you're so worried about it that like, you know, the people around you know what you're doing, and like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know.
I see what you're saying, and I think that, you know, for a lot of people, it's a scary thought, simply because we live in a very individualistic culture, like it, specifically in the United States, where you are encouraged to be an individual and to capitalize on your individuality. Like, and I see you like, you know, shaking your head. Like I know what you're, I know kind of what you're thinking, and I think I agree, although I don't want to put words into your mouth, but you know, you're also supposed to be part of the pack as far as consuming, you know? So I get that there's like a double-edged sword, but a contradiction there. But you know, the United States seems to be kind of based on individuality. Individuality, and how, well, you know, I like this kind of music and these are my opinions, and I you know, I have the right way of thinking about the world, and et cetera, et cetera, and everyone is kind of just nuanced in their own way, kind of a thing. And so to me, it's no surprise that that goes hand in hand with this sort of desire for privacy, because in order to feel like you are truly an individual, you need to have some things to yourself, I guess, some things that maybe nobody knows, or some things that at least the time and space to like learn and and do things to with a degree of anonymity, you know, like, does that make sense? Like, I don't know that that's necessary, but
I don't know that that's something that has ever happened though. Like, where do you do those things that you have that absolute anonymity?
Well, I guess
you can go for a walk in the woods and, like, you know, take a pee or whatever. I mean, whatever you're doing out there by yourself in the woods is, right. I guess it is private or whatever. But for the most part, like, if anything that's going to have, like, any sort of substance or, like, how do you do that without, like, interacting somehow with, like, the or
with
people
the world.
Being... knowing what you're up to and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, who lives that level of isolation? I understand, like, not wanting, like, your bank information out there and, like, certain, like, technical information about, like, this is the pin to my ATM. You
right.
know, this is, like, where my, you know, when I pick up my kids or whatever. Like, there's security stuff that I understand.
I mean, even your address and your, you know, your...
But
where,
like,
your home is.
And what's the difference of, like, you know, the like Amazon telling you knowing what you're buying and all that sort of stuff, and like the person that, I mean, like going to Starbucks and they know your drink when you walk in because you go there every morning and they know your drink and they have it like ready to go and they know that you also like this and they're like, whoever's working says, like, hey, you want this because I know you like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same sort of deal, but one of them sends people like thinking that, oh my god, they've got all my information.
Right. Well, because think about that, like with the Starbucks example, there's this illusion of choice type of a thing that's built into being able to walk in there every morning and choose to have your regular drink
or something else. Mm-hmm.
Right. Where, you know, whereas like if it was programmed in the Starbucks database, which, you know, who, I don't know if it fucking is, probably not, but you know, then it would, people would feel like, well, I'm less autonomous, you know, like everyone, no matter which Starbucks I go to, they're gonna ask me mm-hmm. if I want this drink and what if I don't want it. I mean, it's a very small thing, but it, you know, people
it's
are
a computer
fickle.
It's a computer knowing that and not Sally the barista.
Yeah,
I guess is the difference there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's a weird thing that we really worry about it that much, where like privacy has kind of given rise to a lot of super negative American behaviors.
Mm.
I think.
Yeah.
You know, like serial killing is one. You know, you can't really do that if
you're not a
pretty private individual.
Shit.
You know, there's a lot of like loneliness and a lot of like disenfranchisement, a lot of like,
but I think there's a
amass a bunch of guns and go shoot people and nobody knows that it's going to happen. You know, there are things
right.
about this privacy thing that we pay a price for, and
yeah.
it's not something that can be regulated by a government. It's something that has to be like ingrained into the culture for it to work.
But I think you're also kind of equating privacy with isolation. And I think those are two very different things, although they're connected.
You have to have one to have the other. Truly.
Right.
To have a real privacy. I mean, it depends if you want privacy from certain individuals, then that's a different deal. But if you worry about generalized privacy, you have to have isolation and the ability to operate without people monitoring what you're doing with a good chunk of your time.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? You've got to have time to do whatever creepy shit that you want to be able to execute in order to become like a Charles Manson or a Jeffrey Dahmer or something. You know, they have to have some time that they're not being monitored to get that stuff done. And that's a privacy thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's also an isolation thing, but I don't think you can have one without that other, without the other.
Yeah.
And I do think that America has this level of like this individuality to it. But I think it's part of that American, like, rugged individual frontiersman out there on their own.
Right.
Like, I'm standing on my own, and this is my likes and my wants and my thinks and my thoughts, and I'm mm-hmm. going to be the big man on campus.
Right.
And that's a huge deal in America. But I think most of it is kind of an illusion. It's always been an illusion. You know, that even people out in the fucking middle of the frontier, like, the five or six people they were with, like, knew everything about them that they ever did. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was no, like, you know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's, I mean, I think the permanency of the record is what is the concerning thing, I think, in a lot of ways.
Who writes the history?
Well, that there is a history constantly being downloaded and uploaded, and you're on all of these records that never disappear ever. Mm. You know, you don't ever escape like that time you pooped pants when you were in seventh grade. You right. know, you ever. People can go back and find that, and that is a thing mm-hmm. that will exist forever. Where when I was a kid, like, you could do all sorts of crazy stuff, and then no one would ever know.
So it's almost like we're talking about a sort of, there's different kinds of privacy. There's like temporal privacy, where there is one thing to be private in the current moment, mm-hmm. which is to be autonomous and to have the option to like do and think what you want as a current individual, but to have your past privatized is something different. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like think about it, before there was an internet, if you moved to another town, like where no one knew you, mm-hmm. no one knows anything about you, like other side of the country, mm-hmm. your past is now completely in your hands as far as what you want to tell people, who you tell it to, how you want to maybe right. twist events. Sure. So that's like truly a private thing. Like the individual is the key holder to their own past in an instance like that. Whereas nowadays it's public, you know, depending on what you put on the internet, because we're talking about the, you know, mostly advent of the internet, but also phones, because I think that shit is recording you at all times. Like there's a microphone, it's recording you. It takes that data and sells it to advertisers. And then you see it in your Instagram story, you know?
Yeah. I think that type of shit. Some evidence to say that at times things are going on. With the phones, for sure. I've had just too many eerie coincidences. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's so difficult for me to really even formulate.
Well, I really liked what you said about privacy never really fully existing in the like idealized sense that people are, you know, all mm-hmm. upset over mm-hmm. now.
And I do think that there are issues though today. I'm trying to articulate, it's hard for me to articulate exactly, because there is a legitimate issue of concern, I think, for people tracking your behaviors at this point. Because I think life in the Western world is kind of, would be so hard, if not impossible, without kind of engaging in like electronic commerce. And just the tracking of like your purchases through electronic commerce, like there is a record being kept of you that was not available if, for example, you lived in a large city. You could go to the bookstore and buy books or whatever you needed to look up or whatever you were doing.
Or pay for things in cash.
Mm-hmm. Or write checks and like, it was just less of a record that was permanent, that was easily called up by anybody. They can look at, you know, anybody could get down there and figure out everything that you've done for a long time. And that's a new deal in the sense that it's hard to like move to a new city and take on a new personality. You know, you just can't.
Yeah, I think we talked about that in a previous episode, like how difficult that would be to...
How difficult that sounded, but how many people actually do it? That's what's the that's how we got mm-hmm. on that topic.
Right, it's missing
persons.
There's
a huge number of mm-hmm. people that do move to a different mm-hmm. spot and just change up their
just
thing.
Change it all.
It's a weird deal. So somehow it might be possible, but I don't see how. You know, that's how entwined I am with all of it.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't see how I would be able to successfully like,
I think it is possible, but it's not,
some black market connections to make it
right.
go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Some new credentials.
You need a new social security number, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
It's funny though, that you mentioned cashless or just like buying stuff with cash, because I was listening to NPR today on the ride over and that's what they were talking about. They were talking about moving society in a cashless direction. And the guy on there was like, well, you see, Sweden has a cashless society and we all know Sweden is the pinnacle of humanity. Current Sweden. Oh, I love Sweden and just how enlightened they are. And they're so white there too. Oh, I didn't. I didn't mean white. I meant like the snow is white, you know, because there's a lot of snow. No. The white thing, that's bad. Oh, yeah. You know, but I don't know. I don't know what that kind of went off the rails. But this guy was just kind of like, you know, they always go on about Sweden in this
like they love Sweden, they love Norway.
All the Scandinavian countries, you know, oh, they're going cashless, and they were just kind of referencing Sweden in any sort of idea they had. They were like, well, I don't know if, you know, Sweden would go that far. I don't know if Sweden would say something like that, but, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
NPR makes my skin crawl sometimes.
Oh, my God. Sometimes I subject myself to it because I might be a little bit of a masochist, I think.
Well, sometimes it's great.
Sometimes it is great. I heard
oh, my God, it makes my skin crawl sometimes.
They did a thing about the songwriting industry like a week ago, and I was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. I like, yeah. This isn't even like a political in any way.
No.
There's no like identity politics. There's no economic politic. They're not trying to push any sort of opinion on me. Mm-hmm. This is just informative.
Right.
And so that was great, but that was not the case today. They were talking about a cashless world and how, of course, it's not going to be Bitcoin. No. There's no way it could be cryptocurrency. It's going to be some sort of, you know, other thing. And he was just very vague and very self-congratulatory the whole time. And I could see, though, how, you know, once we go cashless, to kind of tie it back to privacy, depending on the method, like, it, you know, but that could be the real end of, you know, any semblance of privacy is once everything is like digital credit based,
right?
You know,
yeah, there's, I mean, at a point there is, I mean, you're always attached to like your entertainment, and whatever you're doing through a computer for the most part, and they can monitor all of that if they want to, because you have to go through the public access of the internet, and there's ways to do that.
They can.
And soon they're going to have like really perfected facial recognition software.
Oh, it's already really good, I think.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, everything's going to start getting on that same network, and just, you're always going to be on some sort of like CCTV, no matter where you are.
Yeah.
I mean, already in Britain, I think like when
it's
you're
London.
Out London, you're like 90% of the time you're on some sort of camera, or maybe even higher than
that. I think
that.
It's 99%. I think they've got the entire city covered in cameras.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's fucking dystopian.
But it's going that way all the time. And cameras are getting smaller and smaller, and they're just going to be able to figure out what you've done every minute of the day, your entire life, and it's all going to be just stored on whatever it's going to be stored on, and people are going to come to peace with it.
Yeah, and I do get that.
That's what Trump's doing. It's like Trump is like,
I don't know
Trump,
about that.
And not Trump himself, but like the Trump phenomenon. One of the beneficial things that it's doing is it's allowing normal people with checkered pasts to feel okay about trying to run for public office, because you can't be more of an embarrassing train wreck personally than Trump has been in his life.
Yeah.
And if he can do it, anybody else can do it.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have some skeletons in their closet, and you can still go forward.
Yeah.
And we need to get to that point.
I mean, I think that's a general, positive thing.
Because the best people in the world have made mistakes, and they have bounced back from them. I'm not saying Trump's one of the best people in the world, but I'm saying that the best people in the world have
made mistakes.
And you can't hold them down against those past mistakes forever. You have to be able to be like, this is who they are now.
Sure.
And this is why we want to elect them, or we don't want to elect them.
Yeah.
And Trump is kind of paving the way for people to be okay with that in the future.
Interesting.
So that is a positive thing of all of this, and it's something that needs to happen in a democracy pretty soon, because you can't have the people that are able to whitewash their past and shut everybody up and hide every mistake that they've ever done, because those people are powerful and duplicitous and some other things. And those are the people that have been running it for the last like 30 years here, because they're the ones that have hide their past.
Longer than that.
But pretty soon, like, it's going to be so...
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be is going to be just, it's like a reality TV show all the time for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're being filmed at all times. Anyone could tap into your feed unless you have it set to private. Like, please, ladies and gentlemen, set your eyeballs to private, you know, because you'll be able to just like hack through someone's site because we'll all have like retinal implants or something like that.
It's a possibility.
It's going to be crazy. But I'm still kind of excited for it because I think, you know, if humanity has ever done anything, it's adapt. And we, I think, have the potential, like you said, to psychologically adapt to a world where everyone's skeletons are out in the open and everyone's, you know, all the worst things that everyone's ever done is just there for anyone to see. And so it kind of makes it a new, like...
And I think also that's, we see that in a lot of different parts of our society right now where like that, let your freak flag fly and just being like super good with all sorts of stuff that just wasn't even really talked about before. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like
in
like everybody being like consciously trying to be like super okay with it, you know? And it's just like this weird paradox that like if you have to like make campaigns, if like people are constantly getting on the internet and telling everybody about how okay they are with whatever it is that they're okay about, like that's always just kind of the lady doth protest too much in a way, like, you know, you're the one that's pointing out the fact that it's a big deal constantly, you know, in a way.
So
there are people that I'm not saying that like Osela, like with the trans movement or different things that they're just like so deeply into the fact, pointing out that it's not a big deal, that they make it a big deal about it not being a big deal.
That what's not a big deal?
Any of these issues, these like these identity politics sort of issues.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
What I'm saying?
So you're saying that to be trans is not a big deal. Like you're saying
it is a big deal for the person that's trans or what, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But like the fact that like,
but they're also trying to make it
the
normal
fact that you
or whatever.
Accept it, or you're making it a normal part of like that. You're pointing out that it should be normal and you better make it normal and threatening everybody. I mean, like
you're making a stink about it not being normal enough. Therefore, continuing to point out the abnormality of it,
right?
Kind of a thing,
right? Bringing it up repeatedly for no like reason, well, not necessarily no reason, but like,
I mean, I think there's valid reasons and situations to bring it up, and probably good ways to go about it. But I think in a lot of cases, those aren't the reasons or the ways that it does get brought into the conversation.
I don't know. This is dangerous thinking. I think it's probably logically dangerous too, but like there's some part of me that thinks that like the more that society focuses on an issue, the more that issue becomes pronounced. You know what I'm saying? Like, the more we give, like, lots of footage and coverage to people that are doing mass shootings, the more mass shootings we get. That, as an example.
Yeah.
And the more we talk about, like, how people are hateful towards, like, for example, trans people. Mm-hmm. And how, like, oh, they want their own bathroom or whatever crap it is that you're trying to constantly. And, like, you better let them have their own bathroom or it doesn't matter. You have to be cool about it or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it was never an issue before, you know, really, truly. And that is kind of a thing that, like, I don't ever remember that being a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, ever about for anybody. And I've known some people that are, like, totally, like, and I've never heard them bring it up ever before that.
Specifically the bathroom
thing? Bathroom issues.
Yeah.
Like, you know, no one pays any attention to what you're doing in a public bathroom generally, hopefully.
That's funny. It's interesting because... my dad's an architect. He's working on a school right now.
Uh-huh.
And they want, you know, gender neutral bathrooms put in this new school.
Right.
And it's interesting, you know, like you think about it in the context of a high school, because, a gender neutral bathroom really just means single use. So it's a room that one person can go in and lock it themselves. No matter what their gender or anything, you know.
It's a bathroom.
It's a bathroom, yeah. But when you think about that in the context of a high school, having a lockable, let's say smokable room in a high school, a room where two kids could like go in and fucking start banging, you know, or, you know, sexual assaults could happen. Basically like a room where the students control, have some control over like locking it, you know, and it's like a small individual use one. Like that to me seems kind of dangerous, not for any like ideological, like I don't believe that trans people are valid or anything like that. It's just like, just logistical, realistic. Like let's talk about like high school teenagers or whatever. Like they're always up to trouble. It's a cliche, but it's also cliche for a reason. Like, does it sound like having a bathroom that they can like lock and go in whenever they want? Like, I don't know if that's a good
thing. It seems problematic. Yeah. It seems like that would be something that would be,
I don't know.
I mean, I feel like there might be something that's necessary as far as that goes. I don't know, really.
Exactly. I don't know either, but it's just like some of the solutions that get offered. I'm like, I don't know.
Seem like a good solution.
Right.
You know? That's like arming teachers to stop like shooters. That doesn't seem like a good idea, just judging from the teachers that I had in high school.
Mm-mm.
Would I have wanted all of them to have guns?
Have guns, dude.
I wouldn't have wanted.
Fuck no.
I wouldn't have wanted
that. And it's partially because like, yeah, I don't want the guns around some of these crazy kids either.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
and like, I don't know, maybe the kids would behave more if there's a Glock on Mr. Smith's hip, you know, or whatever. Maybe that would happen,
but Miss Eli's on pills, and she's going to leave her Glock just sitting on the top of her desk while she passes out like on the other side of the room, and little Timmy can just pick it up and just start fucking shooting fuckers,
right?
You know, so like, I mean, that's also something that's going to happen in that situation.
No, it seems like a lot of. Well, I mean, we've got to get through all the bad ideas. But again,
like that is an idea.
Sure.
You know, like that I totally see that as an idea.
It's worth discussing.
Like, if I were playing a video game where I had to protect a school from like people that were breaking in and shooting it, like I would give the teacher a gun.
Yeah.
You know, that would be like one of the first things I would think of, like, oh, as a video game, like, well, maybe that'll work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not a good idea in real life, but like, you know, on like really on a real simplistic terms, like, well, let's give all the adults guns on the other side, so there's more people shooting back.
Let's
like on a real cowboys in a cowboys and Indians type of math, that makes sense.
Sure.
And it appeals to a certain like
certain demographic.
Yeah, certain demographic.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
You know what's another funny thing? And I didn't mean to get this all so political, but like just on NPR, when I was listening to them, when did Russia become like our number one enemy again? and I know when it happened. Yeah. I know it's because of the election stuff. It was rhetorical, but it's also like, it's so, what's the word for it? It's so over the top, the way they at least state it in a lot of the mainstream media, where they're like, well, you know, Russia, which is clearly United States' number one sworn enemy, thinks this, this, and this. I'm like, did I just hear that from like an NPR pundit? Yeah. They called another country our sworn enemy.
It's weird.
That is bizarre because like these are people who, you know, during the 50s would have been getting blacklisted for their leftist ideas, kind of a thing, you know, for their ideas that like, you know, that would have gone along with Russian society. Mm-hmm. And it just is weird to hear it boiled down into something that black and white, you know, like we're talking about an entire nation here, a big fucking nation. And to just be like, Russia is our enemy, our number one enemy, because they may or may not have helped this guy that we don't like, basically.
Well, I think that, yes, Russia has been extra villainized since Trump's been elected, for sure. And
like, I get not liking Putin.
But at the same time, like, I mean, I get not liking Russia. I mean, like, I mean, not in general, like all the people and everything in it, but like as a nation state and like a political entity, as opposed to United States, like they do offer a lot of things about them that I mean, they meddle in a lot of elections, not just American elections. I mean, it's a proven deal that they are kind of like run by a dude that does the it's kind of like a country run by the KGB. That's problematic.
The United States was run by the head of CIA, George H.W. Bush.
Sure, like, it's a different situation in Russia than it is in the United States.
I understand it is different, but there are parallels.
Quite different. There are some.
We meddle in elections too.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we are by no means, like, it's kind of almost ironic that we complain this much about that, because we have been doing, like, political coups were like just something we did like every couple years.
That was a little hobby.
In the 60s,
little side
70s,
hobby.
Like all the time.
Yeah.
That was just something that happened. And Russia does the same thing. And like, we have known that all along.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
It's how the Cold War is fought, is through proxy.
But they want Russia, you know, they are, they've got a political agenda just as much as AM radio does now. Mm-hmm. I mean, NPR absolutely has a political agenda to it that is just as unappealing as like AM radio.
Seriously.
You know, at times. And at times, like, some of my favorite, like, some of the radio guys on AM radio that I listen to, they can have shows that are just fucking great.
Yeah.
And it's not about like the politics. They are like really entertaining, great.
I like Larry Elder.
I don't know that one.
Larry Elder's he's a good one. He's funny. And I mean, he does get, you know, he is political, but he's like the one guy on that AM side of things that I can listen to and get a kick out of. But oftentimes I'll just be, you know, pressing the dial back and forth, you know, on a long
drive.
Well,
there's a line, and I know when the line goes, and they just start berating. They pick a topic, and they just tell, like, oh my God, here they are. They're indoctrinating the faithful right now.
Right.
And telling the people the new talking points for the dinner table.
Right.
And I just can't sit here and listen to it.
Yeah.
Because it just is just asinine. It's not any logic. And most of the time, you can just tell. Sometimes they're logical, and sometimes they're factual, and sometimes they're like being entertaining, and other times they have an agenda, and they don't hide it as well as I think that they do on either side.
Wait, neither side hides it as well as they think that they're hiding it?
Right.
I see.
That's the deal, is I think that that's the problem with the mainstream media right now on both sides, is they really underestimate the savviness of the average viewer at this point. And everybody knows that they're fucking full of shit.
Well,
you know, but the money that puts those sort of things up requires them to have a certain spin to it. And it's just totally apparent. So nobody trusts anything other than the cuckoo birds that they find on YouTube that totally believe everything that they say because they are independent or whatever, but they're not necessarily like the most qualified, informed individuals out there in the world that are required to give you information. So
if we're talking mainstream media, like, I understand there's like Fox News, there's Breitbart, there's
CNN.
No, but I'm just talking about like the conservative ones in the mainstream media.
Sure.
What can you name another one that's like in the mainstream? Like, I know there's all these underground blogs and YouTubers and stuff, but on the conservative side, I can think of like two, maybe like Wall Street Journal sometimes, kind of.
I mean, like the radio, AM radio is huge. I mean,
sure.
And that's a huge, huge
AM radio
demographic.
I'll for sure give you that.
So,
but all I'm saying is that it seems like there is a heavy, heavy bias towards the left just in the mainstream media. Like, I'm talking Vice, I'm talking Wall Street Journal, I'm talking, Wall Street, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, ABC, MSNBC, like the list goes on and on and on and on. And while I do think people are very savvy to the biases of places like Fox News, they seem to be a little more willfully ignorant of somewhere like the New York Times.
Well, what I think is going on there is that side of things is still broken up into two parts, you know, on the so-called liberal side of the media. There are still people in that arena that are doing great journalism, I think, you know, that are in the middle and trying to report what's going on, and it's not pretty what's going on. And some of this stuff can, and sometimes they get spun by the shit heels into being like one way or another, but you can kind of tell, like, sometimes there are stories that are pretty legitimate stories that are just broken by honest to God of journalism. And then there are these people that are just like the pundits on both sides that just spin it to these illogical extremes.
Sure.
You know, and that happens simultaneously on the same program, except at Fox, they have streamlined it into the point where it's just peppered in, like the punditry is peppered in constantly. It's an entertainment. It's not a news reporting in the same sense that like MSNBC is an entertainment network rather than a news thing. And it's become like these two different things. The entertainment arms and both of them are just absolutely horrible. And, but I do think that even at the Wall Street Journal and like, Washington Post and some other of the ones, like there are still like solid journalism,
reputable going folks
on there.
Sure.
For sure.
I agree with that. I do think though that even those reputable institutions have in a lot of ways been forced to play the tabloid National Enquirer grab 'em headlines game, you know.
No, it's a steady. That's what makes the, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not saying like them as businesses are probably just like, well, shit, it's what gets, it's what sells papers,
and that's what sells papers.
Yeah, and so I understand that there's that aspect as well, and that it might be more of an adaptation rather than a, you know, like a willful trajectory. Like it's more like they're adapting to a current situation just to survive rather than like this was their plan from the beginning, you know. But
and a lot of people that consume those materials are college educated people from the 60s and 70s and the 80s that are liberals, and they want to have their opinions repeated back to them.
Yes.
Or they will not support that any longer. Right. People are spoiled in that way, that they want to hear what they agree with.
So true.
That's it.
So true.
They don't want to read another edit. I mean, they don't even want editorials by people that they don't. That's the idea of the editorial page, is you bring in people that don't agree, that have unique opinions or varying opinions, and you let them have a little bit of time where they just talk their side of things.
Yep.
And there are certain newspapers that don't allow like people other than singing in the choir all to appear, because nobody wants
or
to
it's
hear
like
it.
Even the editorial section is like, oh yeah, we brought in our local, you know, conservative, but it's like completely watered down or something like that.
Or look at the liberal that Fox News always has on their talk show. Like, I mean, this guy could barely fucking zip up his fly after fucking shit in his pants.
Dude.
And like they have that guy come in there and like, oh no, we should give free school to everybody.
It'll be
like Christmas.
Oh man.
And then they just fucking kill that. And then the same thing happens on the liberal side of things. And it's disgusting and it's stupid.
So true. Some of my friends have showed me like these Tucker Carlson videos, right? Where Tucker Carlson destroys liberal like Professor Cuck or whatever. Like they show me these videos and I'm like, oh my God, dude, they found, like, did they just find this guy on the street and like clean him up and dress him up like a professor, you know, because he is babbling nonsense and Tucker's just sitting there with a smirk on his face, like, you know, ready to pounce. And it's just playtime. Like it's a parody.
It's like feeding like a cricket to your lizard.
Yeah.
It's fucking, and you think that, and you think that like people don't.
I just saw my friend the other day or yesterday who has bearded dragons.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I saw awesome. So that just hit home for me.
So it's but people, they think that people don't notice it. You know, that a good majority of people don't notice
it. I mean, a lot of them don't.
But this media has been going on for 20 years, and you know who notices that shit? Teenagers. Because their parents are watching it, and teenagers are looking for reasons that their parents are full of shit.
Yeah.
And if you're watching any of that stuff, teenagers will be like, that's full of shit. You're watching it. You're full of shit.
Yeah.
I'm awesome.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what's going on right now. And, like, it's all, like, they just don't trust any of it. You know, and it's going to backfire because their kids are going to be like, man, you're like just getting all your information from like anti-vaxxer YouTube videos, right. You know, so yeah. That might not be a good idea because like, you know, I'm blind now because of whatever yeah. childhood disease. So yeah. maybe I'm going to start like, you know, listening to like some yeah. people with some credentials again.
Mommy, or... why was I born blind? Oh, you just, God just had a special little reason, a special little gift for you.
Yeah. So
and I wanted you to be good at piano.
And my hope is that like this millennial push toward everybody being special and all this sort of stuff, there will be a reaction to that, like where maybe I'm not so special. Sure. And like, I just got to, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think that there is going to be kind of a backlash to this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. I'd agree. I think it's been coming.
I hope it doesn't involve barbarians coming over the wall and like destroying our society.
That's why we're building the wall, Craig. We got to build it higher.
But I mean, every society that this happens to, that's generally what happens next is like
the invasion.
People from the fringes of the society that don't share the lofty values and the kumbaya attitude of the people that are actually the most powerful, but they become that population becomes so
wait, you think the people
become so docile that they no longer are strong enough to defend their culture from these elements that come in from the fringes that have the strong, like, more authoritarian values and they hold, like, more of this, like...
Right. Because it's like, well, you can exist too in my, there's a room for everyone in my little world. Right. And then this person comes in, oh, okay, well, in my belief, I am the ruler of this continent and you yes. have to do everything I say or be punished, subject
right.
to death.
Right. Yeah. And that's
sort of happens. That belief's okay with me too, because I believe, I think
matter.
Everything's good.
I believe that it doesn't matter what you believe and you've let me do this and I'm just going to take over. And sometimes they have yeah. swords and sometimes they just show
it does
show
matter what
over.
People believe.
Right. And that happens. And, you know, it's potentially can happen in our society. Because if you look at a lot of like the different, like, that's one thing that the Muslim societies as a culture mm-hmm. are very like, we know it's right, we know it's wrong, and like we're gonna run it the way we're gonna run it. That's mm-hmm. what's happening in Europe and like all parts of America and different things. Those are the neighborhoods where they become mostly Muslim, it becomes like a Muslim area.
Yeah.
You know, like, because those things are not negotiable amongst those folks. You
right.
know what I'm saying? They're not nice about it.
Mm-mm.
You know, that's just the way it is, you know, because it's an affront to them and I get it or whatever. But like, again, it's,
what part? Well, okay.
I mean, like they don't tolerate like
questioning the narrative.
It angers their God. And for whatever reason, I understand why that could be a big deal to you. You know, I guess,
yeah,
I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I don't personally follow it, but like, I can see why. Like that.
If you've bought that whole thing, hook, line, and sinker, I can see why that would be a big deal.
Well, whatever social mores your culture has, those are unifying cultural mores, and to protect those is to protect the unification
culture
of
itself,
your culture. You
sure.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
there is a certain thing that we're not doing that in Western society, where we are mm-hmm. becoming like, we're kind of we're not protecting those core things anymore. We're super questioning those core things that make us Westerners. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, that's not a unique thing, but it's like we're in that position as far as like the American empire, where we're starting to question who we are and what we do. And most of the time when an empire is on the rise, they're not questioning who they are and what they do. They know who they are and they know what they're supposed to do. Mm. And they're not in that reflective period. Empires in a reflective period are just about ready
to fall
to something else. Yeah.
Interesting. That's interesting because it gives me kind of a visual of, it's almost like we're bursting at the seams, like a guy who's just eaten way too many of all these different things and it's causing you some mad indigestion now. Not that it's like bad to have different groups of people, but, you know, 'cause we've said in episodes before, that's like a huge strength. Mm-hmm. of the United States is just all the different types of people that are here,
sure,
making,
sure,
it,
absolutely.
Making it
absolutely.
Exceptional from any other country on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously there's going to be indigestion too. Like when you have all of these different beliefs and ways of living and cultures that don't necessarily like allow for room for each other, mm-hmm. like built into their belief system, like that can.
Well, I mean, take for example, language, you know, yeah. I mean, there is a point in American history that English maybe was not declared the official language, but if you wanted to be a successful American, you had to learn English. Sure. And now you can go for generations here. And if you live in the right community, like you don't ever have to learn. You get a translator for everything that you need to have. And like, you don't really have to learn English, you know? And that,
I mean, I still think it's still pretty darn essential.
But that allows certain elements of immigrant populations to remain in those isolated. Mm. That's like if Polish people would have been like, oh, I don't have to learn Polish because all these signs are in Polish too, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they can stay like always speaking Polish. And there are no pockets of Chicago where people only speak Polish. Mm. There might be some grandmas there that still only speak Polish. But like there were neighborhoods just like that that would be totally integrated. And now like that's kind of allowed to perpetuate itself more. And like, I think that for whatever, everybody speaking the same language and understanding what's going on is a unifier, no matter what language it is. Mm-hmm. You know, like even if we all started speaking Spanish or whatever, like as long as everybody's on the same page, you can understand what's going on. That's a unifier. And we've kind of let that sort of thing go, you know, and it's a really weird choice.
Well, it's just, yeah, it is. And it's just interesting to me that, because...
It's almost like we're putting what feels right. Like, oh yeah, well, English isn't more important than all these other languages, but like there is also like a utilitarian reason that everybody should speak the same language.
Right. And see, that goes against my liberal upbringing, you know, to think that any language is better than another language.
I mean, because like everybody being able to communicate in the same language would be more egalitarian and have a better,
right?
You know, that works with it
totally. And but what I'm saying is I agree with you, like you're making sense, but it's like that idea is so associated with xenophobia and like being a conservative who's like afraid of the outside world. You know, a lot of people try to tie the whole like belief that English is good, like it's good if everyone can speak it in the United States. If you come here from somewhere else, you gotta learn the language.
Right.
You know, people will tie that to, yeah, like, oh, because you're afraid of other cultures, or, you know, you're a conservative or whatever. But I agree with that, and I don't really identify as a conservative, you know?
Oh, I don't identify as a conservative either, but I know that, like, kind of what works, you know, like, why things, it just makes sense. Yeah, so...
Yeah, we're killing it. We've got an hour...
Oh, we should probably wrap it up.
2 minutes.
Probably wrap it up.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I was even saying.
We were on about some crazy shit. We were on about, you know, speaking English and...
Oh, yes. But the Hayakawa is the guy that came up with like proposing. He was a senator from Hawaii and passed away a long time ago. But in the 80s, he was one of the first people to put up that English as a national language as a bill. And he was a Democrat, you know, and he was a Japanese immigrant to Hawaii. And he thought that it was a great idea that everybody be made to
learn. He probably saw
English.
Some people firsthand struggle.
His own family. Yeah. His own family. Like the importance of learning how to speak English and speak English as a young language. So we should probably wrap this up, though.
Yeah,
we covered a lot of the important topics about a lot of things.
God, yeah, we're a bit all over the place with this one.
I don't know what we're going to title this one. This is our first, like, we're just kind of doing it like jazz style. We're just calling this one jazz style.
We're doing it jazz.
We had no idea. We did no research is what that means. We just didn't even pick a topic.
Well, see, that's normal for me because I normally don't really do any research.
Yeah. Yeah. But usually you kind of know what we're going to talk about.
That's
like,
true.
And this time you didn't even know what we're going to talk about.
It was fully improv'd.
Yeah. Like next time we may like just turn on the mics and just whatever. Not even like talk into them. Just hang out. Just hang out.
It'll just be an ambient podcast.
We could have this ambient
moving
podcast.
Things.
You know, actually, that probably would do just as well as us talking.
All right. Do you want to close this one out?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, if you're listening out there, go check out our Spotify, because we just made a Spotify account and it's got all of the songs from our hitter shits.
Actually, it's actually been a while. We've had a Spotify account for a while.
Well, you know? I just found out about it.
No, you just did.
Like
your,
a
you
few
just
weeks
finally
ago.
Came through in the heavy metal mix that you've been promising for like 6 months.
It's the ultimate metal mix.
Yeah, but we finally got that up. Yeah. Well, it's been around for a while. So like,
yeah, you know, so go check it out. All you got to do is search IDTU.
We should really hit the guilt button with the folks.
Come on, guys. Come on.
At this point, we got to start making them
feel
bad.
We've been slaving away for so long, you know.
Better.
You just, please.
Do I
need to beg?
Not pathetic. No, not pathetic. Make them feel guilty.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It would just be nice if, you know, if you maybe did it once in a while.
I mean, we just put out an episode every 2 days. That's all. You know, that's all we do.
That's all. It's mostly Craig, though.
It's not mostly. Stop.
That's what I tell people. It's all Craig.
Yeah, I feel like that's when you get, like, negative feedback. It's like
no.
When you bring that one up.
No, it's not. That's not true.
All right. Well, continue closing this out, because I feel like I'm almost done.
Yeah. You know, go on to Instagram and harass us there. Our email is idtu.podcast@gmail.com. Let us know if, you know, we say anything that you hate, or if you just hate us, we like to know. And it's fun to read, and we'll read your hate mail on.
We kind of hate us too sometimes.
That's the big secret. Yeah. But yeah, thanks for listening, folks.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Have a good night.
Discuss the Universe is recorded in IDTU Studios, located in Portland, Oregon. All opinions and commentary has been carefully researched by the technicians and scholars of IDTU Research Academy, and therefore should be greeted with healthy skepticism and disbelief. No idiots were harmed during the making of this podcast.